Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. I realize that I don't think we did a proper intro, so this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is Season 9, Episode 17, Gypsy Woe Is Me, of NYPD Blue. And it's important that you watch it before listening to this podcast, because it's not very structured. We don't really do a full recap of the episode, and we just talk about things that stick out to us, and so it's a good idea to watch it beforehand. NYPD Blue is currently available on Hulu. It is available on Disney Plus, I believe, outside the U.S., and for what I understand, it's not available in every territory on DVD, but I think it's available in America on DVD, and while I would never suggest you do it, you could find these episodes for less than legal means on the internet. I would never suggest it. Never. But here's the show. Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls.
Shh, too loud. You have the window open. We have neighbors.
Okay, well,
respect it, please.
Thank you. What do you mean? Respect it?
It's a joke. Okay, quick question before we start. What's with the outfit?
We're doing a fit check on a podcast?
Well, just like...
You know what's with the outfit? I felt like looking fucking rad today. That's what the outfit is. Because,
okay, everything's... I think... Can I just tell you everything? Can I tell you something?
Uh-huh.
95% out of 100.
The hat?
No.
What?
Your shoes.
The shoes are bad?
Everything is striped. Everything is stripes. You got your stripes on your socks. You got your stripes on your sleeves. Stripes on the socks match the sleeves. It's a black, white, gray thing. You got your little, you know, fancy, funny shirt, hat. It's just, you know, an eccentric black hat. It's cool. It's got a little orange to give a little pop of color. It's not too crazy. And then it's checkered shoes, man. Checkered. We don't need another pattern. Because it bounces off this pattern right here that's on your shirt.
It's bouncing.
Yeah.
It's bouncing right now is what you're saying.
Like, this is like 95. This is a 95 for you.
Okay. Well,
that's pretty good.
What am I usually at?
Oh, everything's a situation.
Everything's a situation. And it brings it back to NYPD Blue.
Everything is a situation.
This episode.
But no, when you walked in, I was like, oh, wow. And then I saw the shoes. I was like, ah. But then, you know, I'm sitting in a tank top and shorts, so
yeah.
What do I know?
I mean, well, you know, we're some of us are not as fashion forward as others.
Exactly.
Can I talk about NYPD Blue now, or?
I guess I had to get that out.
So is that going to be the bit this episode? We're going to talk about clothes.
No, your clothes are good. It was just the shoes. I think the shoes could go with a lot of other things. I just feel like you had this stripe thing going, and it kind of like
fell apart.
Your feet become messy.
Now, if these were all black slip-ons,
I would like it more. What I would think you should get is
Adidas.
No. Or, yeah, sure. Some New Balances that are black, gray, and white.
I bought New Balances that are black, gray, and white.
There you go. Or some old school Vans that you tie that are black, but then maybe have like the white in it. Something like that, maybe.
Because I bought New Balances because I burnt through my walking shoes. Okay, well, Gypsy Woe's Me, Kyle. Season 9, Episode 17. For those who don't know, it's best that you watch the episode because we're just going to talk about it as a whole. We're not going to break it down into different sections. We're just going to talk about it. And you said before we started recording that you like this episode.
Yeah, this is the one with Cal Penn, right? He plays the family, the one that owns the...
No. That's several seasons off. I know you got to be doing
this. That's not several seasons off. That's a few episodes off, bitch.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because I just scrolled by it on the list of episodes, and it was Cal Penn in season 9. That's what we're in right now. So my joke would have been funny if you wouldn't have been a little bitch about it.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I feel like this was a decent episode. I feel like there are some fun... some interesting storylines, like... Lipe's storyline is interesting.
I do think that Leip is the VIP, not the VIP, the MVP of this episode.
I also remember the first time that I watched this episode being having that M. Night Shyamalan twist when I found out that the dude was the dude's lover. And that's why he hit him. That's in this one, right?
Yes.
Right?
That is this one. I was just confused because I was like, the dude is the lover, M. Night Shyamalan. And then you're talking about one of the cases is a boxer like hanging over a body and he says a big black guy hit him. Because
it looks like he's trying to take his wallet. That's what makes everyone kind of stop. Uh-huh. It looks like he's stealing from him. And then he says, oh, no, there's a really big black dude who frequents this bar a lot. He hit him. He hit the guy and he went down, blah, blah, blah. This is what happened.
And for context, the guy that was hit and on the ground called him a big, stupid ape, which is very racist.
Yeah, 100%.
And it was also kind of, it was a strange episode. Not a strange episode. It's a strange story because it seemed like they were trying to point it because it was Baldwin who was taking the case. But Baldwin just like never really acknowledged it that much until they brought in the big black guy in question, in quotes, when he was like, what he did was stone racist. What would you do? And he's like, well, it depends on my mood.
Yeah. But I think Baldwin always has to come into situations like blank. I don't think he can react. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, yeah,
as the only black man in like this precinct, I don't think he can react towards the stuff that in certain ways. I don't think he can like be like, hey, that's racist, because then everyone's just gonna think like he's the guy who finds everything racist, even though probably 90% of the shit he's pointing out is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I think when Baldwin gets these cases, it's kind of dead to him because he's just more of like, what are the facts? Let's get everything.
And he also
find out who killed this guy, you know?
And he came from the bias unit. So like even Sipowicz was like, so he's going to correct all our language. And it's like, he's just here to work.
Yeah.
But we mentioned that story. Joe is the boxer, Diamond Joe something. And
Diamond Dallas Joe Page. DDP.
DDP. I thought he did a really good job, but it's just not as...
DDP got Lex Luger to stand up. Lex Luger's been unable to stand for like years, and then DDP started having...
So we got DDP, the Holy Spirit.
No, he's doing
miracles.
No, I guess Lex Luger hasn't been able to stand up on his own.
Yeah.
And he's been in like a walker for a really long time. And DDP told him, he's like, let me get a hold of you for like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, DDP yoga.
And I guess he's standing now. It's wild.
Yeah, DDP is out there doing the Lord's work for old wrestlers. But I do feel like this Joe character was
It's not just wrestlers. It's not just wrestlers.
Are we sponsored by DDP? Or
should be. You know why?
Why?
Bang!
You know it's not a visual thing. No one knows what we're doing.
If you know DDP, you know what just happened.
DDP. Can we talk about Joe now? Or
Joe and the volcano?
No, the character of the show that we're supposed to be talking about. I thought he did a good job. He just wasn't... Every time they went back at him, he was saying the same thing. Which is, I didn't do anything. Big black guy hit him.
So watching it the first time, I just thought... He was like just like a fumbly, like dumb guy, dumb boxer.
Yeah.
But then when you find out what's really going on, it's like, no, he's deeply closeted.
You think he's closeted?
He's deeply closeted and or he is ashamed that he has to do stuff for money. I think it could be both.
Yeah.
Or it could also be either or by itself. Yeah, and then I think being called out for his manhood is what made him snap and punch the guy. But
yeah,
It
also kind of made it seem like he's a real dumb dude because
The first time around, 100%. The second time around, you watch it, you feel like he is definitely like, I don't want these men to know that I've, like, another man has touched my penis. That's 100%, like, what he...
Well, yeah.
The way he acts, he's, like, very nervous to, like, even be, like, to admit they're friends.
It also, when they first see him on the street and, like, they're talking about the DOA, he's like, he looks like he can just get right back up. He doesn't even look like he's hurt. And it's like, yeah. The dude's fucking dead, man. Like, there's a level of denial that's pretty intense and weird with the way he's saying it.
Yeah, it's also weird when, like, he keeps saying we're friends, and then someone's like, hey, a bar owner told us that, like, you've been hanging around and you've been, like, more than friends. And he's like, yeah, we know each other. We're friends. Like, I sit on one end of the bar. He sits on the other. Like, he goes to this, like, extent to make sure that he's, like,
not
around this guy because, you know, he would never be around a gay guy. Is this a gay bar? No, it's a regular bar.
It was also interesting how when the black guy comes in and tells his side of the story, he says, I slapped him. And they started yelling at his boyfriend, and I walked away. Yeah. And they, like, the detectives, because they're good detectives, they didn't really clock that to the guy, but they were just like, and what did his boyfriend do? It's like, he just stood there. And it's like, okay, so we're acknowledging that that big dude, the boxer, is the boyfriend, according to this guy. And what does that mean? What was also interesting is there is a famous face in the course of this investigation and the lady across the street that saw that the black guy slapped him and then walked away and then the boxer hit him.
Who is she?
That lady is a woman named Nancy Fish. You may remember her as the landlady from The Mask that yells at Jim Carrey and shoots at The Mask.
Oh.
That shrill...
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. Sorry, I'm not remembering small characters from The Mask.
Well, she was also in Exorcist 3 and Death Becomes Her.
Oh, well, it's my second favorite Exorcist movie, so thanks. Now I know.
But yeah, that whole story just wraps up where he eventually admits, yeah, I was called the F slur, and he said... I don't even think you were ever a boxer. Which.
Calling out his manhood again.
I will say this. He's definitely a boxer if it only takes one punch and you're dead.
Well, it's also like how did the back of his head hit, too? He said the back of his head bounced a couple times. That's not good.
That's that'll do it.
You want to try it?
No. I think I'm good.
I'll just hit you. We'll tape your arms to your side. I'll hit you, and we'll just let you fall down and go.
There's another story happening.
There's a few other stories happening.
That I want to get to because you love the character so much.
Which one are we getting to?
So the boss gets a visit from one of his buddies, Daniel Vega. And Daniel Vega comes...
He's a famous face.
He is?
Yeah.
In what?
He was the...
Are you just doing this to make fun of me?
Maintenance man.
Yeah. Yep, that's what you're doing.
Basketball, when they were working on the field, when guys were out there practicing.
That woman is a big comedic part of The Mask.
He's also in Halloween 45 and Tremors 9.
It just feels like there's 45 Halloweens. There actually isn't. Oh, Jesus. He comes in and he says, hey, my boy got into some bit of trouble. He got into a bar fight. Hit a dude with a pool cue. Drunken fight.
What's crazy is like that's probably the funniest you'll be through this whole episode.
You're such an asshole.
It's like, hey, when was Kirk funny? When he had a stroke.
When he had a stroke. Oh shit. This guy says that his boy's in trouble and he wants some help with it. Tony Rodriguez says, yeah, I'll look into it. And the guy just drops money on his desk.
So are people calling him Tonio?
I thought it was Tony.
Tony. Sometimes this feels like some of them are calling him Tonio. Because his name is Antonio
Rodriguez.
But everyone calls him Tony. White people call him Tony because we have to.
Uh-huh.
We can't let you have your full real name.
They call him Tony Rogers.
Tony Tony Rod. Yeah. So like sometimes it bounces from like Tony to Tony. I feel like it's like Tonio.
Uh-huh.
Like the people who know him call him Tonio.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But it's clear that like they're buddy friends. And then the guy just throws money on the table and Rodriguez is like, hey, put that back in your pocket. I'm doing this as your friend. I'm going to look into it as a friend. He goes to the guy who made the complaint, and the dude is like, I don't know. I got like a hit off him that he's just a dick.
Which dude?
The dude that he goes to the hotel room where the guy who filled out the complaint is.
Yes, 100%.
To basically guilt him into dropping the charges, which is hilarious to me.
Which is also kind of like
fucked up.
Yeah, a little bit, right? Like, we can talk about that.
Yeah, it's not cool to be like, hey, so the guy who did this, he has a really nice family. They're great people. Trust me, just consider the punishment for what happened. And then the guy's like, well, I mean, maybe if I get some monetary compensation.
Was that guy an actor, though?
He had to have been, right?
Was that guy just hired? Was that like an IAB guy?
I think so. It must be. Also, I don't know if you caught it, but when Tony Antonio.
Nothing was thrown my way.
When Tony Raj.
T. Raj, as we like to call him.
When T. Raj says that's not an option and then just leaves. Because once the guy mentions money. I don't know if you noticed, like, Tony just starts looking for, like, cameras and microphones.
Yeah, well, it's also, yeah, I mean, I get it. I feel like that man lacked subtlety when it came to, like, the bribe, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, he was like, bad.
It was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. Hey.
Give me some money?
Give me money.
It was
like this weird jump, and then, like, that would make anyone suspicious.
But when Tony turns around to leave, they show the mirror on the guy, on the actor. And I don't know if you saw his face, but he's giving like a...
Tom Cruise. Oh. Oh, I thought...
I thought it was like his first role or something.
No, Kyle. But when they show you the guy's face, he's given a face like, ooh, fucked it up. Like, kind of like a, oh, I think I went too hard on the money thing. But it was like, yeah, you did a bad job. Like, the guy was not believable or good.
No, the whole sting is reeks of garbage. Like, it's a horrible, like, sting operation.
It doesn't work. Then...
The thing I'm more upset about is how long it takes Tony to realize that it's fake.
Well, it seems like Tony realized it the second the guy mentioned money the second time. The complainant mentioned money. Then he's like, okay, so this is a setup, and he walks out. But he calls his buddy back, and he's like, why did you mention money before? And he's like, oh, I just wanted to do something nice for you. And he's like, you know, the guy mentioned money. And he goes, well, I'm down if you are. And then he's like, okay, so you have a wire on. Like, for real.
He pops his shirt open. And then he's like, give me a chance, Tony.
Well, he gave himself up. That's a hilarious thing about IAB, which this is what it gets into. Fraker busts in, puts Tony on suspension for not reporting a bribe attempt.
I mean, by the book, you know.
That feels like one of those rules.
By the book.
That feels like one of those rules in SOP where it's like standards, like, you know, where.
By the book.
Yeah, anybody can go, well, you've been offered a bribe before. And it's like, everybody has. But we refuse it, and we move on with our day.
By the book.
Gotta
anyway.
Follow. What's the book for if you're not going to follow it?
And I have a question that may or may not blow your mind when we get to the episode after this. That room that Tony's in.
It's in the Matrix, 100%.
With Fraker,
mm-hmm.
where he's like, I felt like this was a no-win setup. He's like, oh, so you don't report up Brian Tapp, but that's my fault. Like, he gets...
That's the same room that Keanu Reeves is in.
I was going to ask, is that...
When Agent Smith is... when they're questioning him?
No.
And so that's how you can tie the NYPD Blue and the Matrix universe together.
I was going to ask, is that Fraker's office?
No, it's probably just like an interview room in IAB.
Okay, remember that when we get to the next episode, that it's just an interview room at IAB.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
he's sitting in there with like a bunch of shit and like a printer, huh?
And there's like nothing else in that office. It's like a dark,
but
featureless room, but he's in there with his papers like doing work.
Watch it again closely to see, like, does he have a printer?
Does a printer make an office?
Yeah. Makes it more of an office than it doesn't.
Makes it more of an
office. I don't have a printer in here, but if I did, it would look more like an office. It would give it more of an office feel. Would it not?
Would it not?
If I had a fax machine, if like you turn around and saw a fax machine sitting right there, you'd be like, whoa, like, what are we in? We're in the front office of a small paper company? What's happening?
So, regardless, Fraker says, like, it seems like you didn't pass your integrity test. He tells him that he's relieved of his command. He's no longer the boss there anymore. They're going to get somebody new in there. And now, while all of the cases are going on, Sipowicz has turned into Piss Sipowicz because he's like, who was that guy? Did we get his name? And John's like, no, the boss waved him in, so he just walked by. And then Sipowicz is like, we gotta have a sign-in sheet. People walk around here like it's a hotel lobby. And then even Connie looks at John's like, you didn't do anything wrong. Like,
but he did do something wrong.
Why? Because he should check him in? Well, the boss waved him in. The boss of the office waved him in.
Still getting a name.
He will come by later in the episode to say, like, yep, I'm on suspension. I'm not the boss anymore. Sipowicz tries to get more out of him, and he gets nothing. And it seems like maybe Tony is not going to be the boss of the 15th. All while that's going on, we have the main case, which I think is the best part, which is Leip. Ryan Leip. MVP of this episode.
I thought it was Lippy.
Hmm?
That was Lippy.
It's Leip.
Oh, Leipy?
Because he has that whole thing where he's like, stop calling me Leip like we're on the same softball team and you're trying to snap my ass.
Snap my ass.
With a towel. Again, I got to give him props. Played by John Billingsley.
Bill Billingsley. His name's Bill Billingsley.
It's John Billingsley.
We call him Bill Billingsley in the acting circles.
He was on Starship Enterprise, or not Starship, but Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, don't even know what he's on, so you probably don't know his real name.
And he was on True Blood.
Yeah, Bill Billingsley in True Blood.
Shut up, Kyle.
You know why I call him Bill, right?
Why?
Because whenever he did work, he said, go ahead and bill me.
Excellent.
And we're like, oh, look at old Bill Billingsley over there.
And my jokes are bad.
I'm glad you can finally admit him.
Leip was a character that was on a previous episode that helped with a case where a small child was shot in their bedroom. And he has a beef with the NYPD because they have him on a DWI, even though it was prescription cold medicine.
Which, when's the last time you got prescription cold medicine?
Never.
Exactly.
But this was the 90s. Well, actually, 2000s.
It's made up. It's not real.
The early aughts.
This is fictional.
It's
what RFK warned us about.
He gets pulled in because his gypsy cab was at the scene of a shooting. He claims it was self-defense after the guy tried to rob him.
He admits it right away.
Yeah.
He just straight up goes, yeah, I shot somebody.
And it was self-defense because they were trying to rob me.
And what?
Yeah, very much. He's like, what are you going to do about it?
And what are you going to do about it? Are you going to persecute me again?
They tell Haywood, like, yeah, it's no big deal.
They let him go home.
Well, they said, well, the thing is, after he tells them what's up and they get the gun, before Ballistics comes back on the gun, they let him go. And Haywood says, it's up to you guys what you want to do because it could be self-defense, but I have to justify it with this body.
They let him go.
So
that's wild.
They let him go.
This was The Wire and that was Brody. You think he's going home? No.
You think he's going? You know what's funny about microphones, Kyle, and microphone stands? If you just place them.
Yeah, but then it's all in my face. And I don't want it in my face all the time. I'll let you know when I want. Well, I'll let you know when I need you, microphone. And right now, I don't need you.
It's probably spiking it, too. And I won't know until I go to record.
Beach volleyball? Watcha!
I don't know.
Is that okay to do?
No, probably not.
Smiking that ball down.
Leip, I think, is
Lip.
Just... Leip is just a great character.
Lip.
Ryan Leip.
Leipy.
He's both incredibly funny, but so annoying.
You found him funny?
Yeah. Yeah, because everything
that
is...
That makes sense. Well, that makes a lot of sense about you. That makes sense. That sums you up.
Well, it's... Well. Shut up.
That sums you up pretty well.
The way he's complaining is very funny, and, like, his character is very funny, just as a character, where it was, like, how he responds like a...
That's you. You and him.
How he responds like an asshole to the detectives, and then just admits to... killing someone in self-defense.
You are kind of like him. You guys are both like stone cold racists.
What are you talking? What?
He won't pick up black people. He straight up admits to that. He admits that he had to quit working for the cab company he worked for because they set up like police officers and regular street clothes to get picked up, and he got summons twice for not picking up certain people for cabs and claiming that he was busy. When he wasn't and it was supposed to be open and take fare. That's what his beef at the end is.
Yeah, but can we also establish that I'm not racist? Because you just casually said, oh, yeah, you're both stone cold racist.
But it's a joke. It's a joke.
He essentially gets broken down into saying...
I'm a stone cold racist.
It's about how much a man can stand because everybody... overlooks him and treats him like shit and robs him and beats him.
Yeah.
So then he just starts shooting people.
He just started shooting. It's not just people. It's black men. That's it.
Yeah.
He's not just picking up white men and shooting them. He's putting himself in situations...
where he can shoot people.
Black men. Where he can shoot black men.
Black men. Mm-hmm. But you can agree that the way he was written was very well and his character was good. Because he also had that moment where he's like,
yeah.
it's about paths crossing. Most crossings are benign and don't mean anything. And like it's just over-explaining weirdness.
Yeah.
I thought he did a great job. I thought it was very, very interesting. And I thought he was funny when he would complain. And if you remember Josh, the guy that waits in rooms, like that seems to be his only job at the precinct.
Yeah. He waits in rooms and files stuff.
Like, he waits in rooms until they're ready to talk to people, then he leaves. He actually gets an acting moment where Leip is complaining to him about some jock at Camp Tomahawk from, like, his youth.
Oh, my God.
And then the second the detectives come in, Josh is like, he's all yours, and, like, runs out the door. I was like, that's funny. That's good show.
The shit that man would talk about. Oh, my God. Just, like, imagine getting your hair cut by someone like that. You might never get out of the chair. The stories would just go on forever. They could have their own conversations. Ugh.
I also really enjoyed how when Sipowicz is interrogating him, I think the second time, And he's like, and he does the, don't say Leip like you're my friend, like you're on my softball team and you're snapping. And Sipowicz goes, and he says, look, I will admit to that, but you will not take my dignity. And then Sipowicz is like, dignity is one of the 10 things we'll take from you. Leip! And like screams Leip in his face. Like, that's really, oh, that's good. That's good stuff. There's also another story or another part of this episode that is kind of strange. John's dad, John the PAA, his dad is on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. And when we saw him last time, basically John walked in and then his dad's like, oh, my gay son is here being gay, talking about gay stuff and
is
being
there a... any way you cannot be gay? Well, gay is what I am, Dad. Oh, you're shoving it in my face.
Yeah, very much... That whole conversation the first time around was very much like, Jesus Christ, like, just let it go. Just let it go, Dad.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me.
No. Just let this whole thing about your son being gay, let it go for like a second.
Yeah, I mean, you should let it go soon, because sooner or later you're not going to be able to let anything go, so...
And John's sister comes in and basically is like, can I talk to you? And he's like, I'm just so busy. He's doing that thing where it's like, I'm so busy. And he just moves like a piece of paper from left to right. Like, I'm not busy. I just don't want to talk to you.
I think, like, if your character has a terminal illness and can't leave the hospital, we need better excuses to why they can't talk to somebody. Like, I feel like that's a trope in a lot of movies where someone will be sitting there and they're mad in the hospital, they can't move. The other person will come to talk and they're like, I'm busy, and they like shuffle their jello.
Well, they don't.
It's like, nah, dude, you're dying. You ain't got nothing to do.
John's dad isn't the one who did it. John did it to his sister.
You ain't got nothing to do. You ain't got nothing going on.
John's sister essentially is like, look, Dad wants to apologize. He wants to
make enabler.
He wants to make amends. He wants to see you before he dies.
This was intervention. We'd be calling her an enabler.
And John goes back down there, and like, this seems like the conversation that they probably should have had the first time. Because it was very much like... Like, I'm not going to talk to you if you can't accept me for who I am. And he's like, does everything have to be about that? And he goes, well, it's who I am. And why would I do something that makes me lose my father's love? To which his dad says, I do love you. You're my son. And then John says, I love you too. And then he's like, can't we just keep it at that? And then they stop talking. I was like, that should have just been the first conversation. It seems like we just spread out this thing.
No, but I think they're also trying to show the tension between John and his father. You didn't really know it. You just kind of feel it or heard about it, but they try to show it and try to show that him and his dad. Like, I think what they try to show is like, oh, yeah, even on his deathbed, he can't accept his son. And so it gives you another reason to call it back.
I do think that it is kind of a big highlight of how the times have changed, where it's like, I think anybody would see that. Well, let me rephrase. I think anybody in our social circles would see that conversation and be like, what the fuck is wrong with the dad? Like, let it go. You're dying. So another thing that's going on, the episode actually starts with it. Theo wants to go to Disney World.
Who cares? Who gives a shit about this? Oh, my God. Woe is me. Oh, my God, my kid wants this hot woman to go to Disneyland with me. Oh, what a bummer. World, whatever.
It's important because they're on the East Coast. It's Disney World. If they wanted to have a real good time, they'd go all the way to Disneyland.
Disney lunatics. That's what it's important to.
Sipowicz.
What gang are you in, huh? You part of the Mad Hatters?
Oh, those gangs don't exist anymore because the prices are too high. That was one of the reasons the prices went up, so that it could get rid of that element, according to the shareholders.
What?
You didn't know about this?
So they priced out the gangs?
They priced out the people that would go to Disneyland all the time that are from that area.
because they're the ones that would have like the back patches and the like fake gangs. And they were like, we need to get rid of this element. How do we do it? We make the annual prices higher so that they can't afford it. Apparently that's like in a meeting. It was brought up and suggested to get rid of the...
Were these gangs dangerous?
No, they just don't like those types of people at Disneyland.
They don't like free publicity.
No. Not when it is in the form of something like that. I think they thought the park was turning too much into like Knott's Berry Farm. Where, I mean, you can go there and have a knife fight.
Interesting.
Anyway, Sibowitz and Theo are talking about Disney World. Theo is just a kid talking about Disney World and then casually drops, you and Connie could go on that ride. And then Sibowitz is like, well, Connie's not going to go with us. And Theo's like, why not? And it's like, well, that's because it's a vacation versus, you know, going to the zoo. And then Theo, I know that you're not a fan of Theo and you've said really weird, fucked up shit about Theo.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, you have.
Prove it.
I mean, I don't have the episodes here, but you called him a lot of mean things.
Like?
Well, you've called him mentally challenged.
I don't think I ever said the words mentally challenged.
No, you said the words you're not supposed to say.
What word is that?
I'm not... It doesn't matter. Theo thinks that Connie's going to go... Sipowitz uses this as an excuse to ask her to go in probably the stupidest way possible.
Keep going.
Where Sipowitz is like, this fucking Disney World thing, such a bitch. And she's like, uh-huh. He's like, yeah, he's been talking about you going, but that's crazy. And she's like, you want me to go? And he's like, would you want to go? Oh, would you want to go? And she's like, yeah, if I'm asked... Like a adult.
I just don't understand why they have this happen. Like, what purpose does it fill? You know what I mean?
Having her go to Disney World?
Yeah. Like, why? Like, what does this storyline show us?
That her and Sipowitz are getting closer together.
We knew that beforehand.
Well, it's a pretty big ask to be like, go on vacation with me and my son.
I get what you're saying. I just felt like they could have done it better.
Yeah, they could have done a crossover with Boy Meets World, where they went to Disney World too.
Yeah, that's what they could have done.
Maybe they could cross over step by step while they're at it, stopping over at their house on the way over to Disney World.
Not land,
world. Because it's important.
Just rip my notes out of the notebook. Just do that.
I didn't mean to do that.
Maybe you shouldn't touch them. What a concept. Thing isn't yours. Don't touch it.
Do you want me to tape it back in?
No.
We got some tape right next to you.
Jesus Christ.
It's actually okay because the page I ripped out is the next episode. Smoke weed every day.
The famous face Octavia Spencer is on this episode. She is...
Oh, that's right. She is. She is the best actor in this whole episode.
Very true. Her one scene is very believable and fun and interesting. And you might know her from The Help, Hidden Figures, Ma, a handful of other things. Oh, Fruitvale Station. She's been in a lot of good shit. Anything else about this episode before you want to wrap it up, Kyle?
No, I like Lipe as a character, and I like the guy who plays Lipe, and I like the story that they have, even though he's racist and seems to have issues with young black men, but supposedly they robbed him first. That doesn't mean anything. What else? I could give a fuck about Florida. Like... I could give a shit that you guys are trying to go to Disney World. You guys are already trying to do a bunch of stuff in New York, so I don't know. And there's that scene where him and like him and Clark have a conversation, right?
That's in the next episode, I think.
It's in the next episode. Never mind then. Yeah, just don't give a fuck about Florida.
Don't give a fuck about Florida. Well, you didn't do well there.
I mean
it's too hot.
I mean the captain getting kicked out kind of sucks. He's like, he's pretty decent. I don't really care about Fraker's acting. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Kind of talked about it. Like, I don't know if it's the way they cut it or what, but any scene that he's in where he's dealing with someone going back and forth, it feels very robotic and very...
dragnetty.
Yeah, there's no, like, flow to it, in my opinion. But, I mean, other than that, you know?
Oh.
I'm forgetting about Laughlin.
We did forget about Laughlin.
Yeah. Yeah, you're forgetting about my favorite part.
I fucking hate Laughlin.
You're forgetting about... Hey, tell me. Was she... Caliente?
Caliente? He... So, yeah,
Kurt,
Laughlin...
Why do you have one page ripped out of all the other ones?
Towards the beginning of the episode, Laughlin catches up with Clark and is like, hey, so Ortiz just buried her husband, right? And he goes, yeah.
You think she's looking for a rebound?
And then Clark goes, are you going to slip off your wedding ring? So is Laughlin married?
That's what we're to assume.
So then he's just a complete dickhead.
Mm-hmm.
Just a complete fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes a run at Rita at one point by being like, oh, you lost your husband? I lost an uncle recently.
Yeah, that comparison blew my mind.
And then when she walks away, John Clark takes that opportunity to be like, yeah, doing a great job, Laughlin. She didn't make you for a douchebag at all. Then Laughlin...
She gave him a look back there, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
She's going up the stairs.
So then... Laughlin challenges Clark to the smoker, which just, hey, you want to get a bunch of cops together and have them punch each other for charity? Don't get it. Don't understand.
You're not a boxer.
Don't understand what the point of it is.
You're not a boxer.
But he...
It's for charity.
He... damages John Clark's ego to get John Clark to do it, and it's like you played right into his hands. Like,
who, John, or John played into
Laughlin's hands.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if he's like, oh, I think one of the detectives should lace him up, and he was just like, no, look, I don't need to beat your ass to let you know you're an idiot. You're just an idiot. We don't have to keep doing this.
Well, Kirk, because that's your. The reason you're able to do that and the right reason you would do that is because you're a pussy. Sometimes you just got to let them catch these hands. You know what I'm saying? Beat your ass and hide the Bible.
If God's watching.
If God's watching. That's what I live by.
The other thing that happens at the very end of this episode that's important is Sipowicz calls Martens, one of my favorite characters.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He calls Martens and he goes...
The juice, to get the juice, because the juice is loose.
And he says, what's the deal with Fraker? And he's like, he's got it out for your boss. And he said, obviously, what's the deal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He's like, what's happened? And he's like, supposedly your boss ratted him out to IAB... And now, even though he's a captain, he can never leave IAB because you have the IAB stink on you.
And then Sipowicz can't believe
that Rodriguez was
quote unquote rat out cops. Yeah.
And it kind of ends with this and what I do think about this story that's kind of lame is every single person tells Sipowicz the same thing, which is better start swimming so he doesn't bring you down with him. You better leave it alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You better leave it alone, Sipowicz. Rodriguez does it too when he leaves the... He's like, just leave it alone and work your case. Don't get involved. And it's like, Sipowicz is obviously going to get involved. So that's what he learns from Martens, and the episode ends with Martens. Martens shows up, he's like, I got a minute, and they literally speak for like 1 minute, and then he gets up and leaves.
Yeah, I mean,
it was like the shortest conversation ever.
At least that time, I mean, at least that kind of makes sense continuity-wise, but yeah, I get you.
Quick famous face again, because why not? We're here. John's dad is played by Peter White. He was the Secretary of Defense in Armageddon.
Oh, shit, yeah.
But Nancy Fish was in The Mask. Octavia Spencer was in some shit.
Yeah, the Nancy Fish, guys. Get it right.
And John Billingsley.
But
Star Trek Enterprise.
Us friends call him Bill.
Anything else before we're done? You've already mentioned. Oh, I also wanted to mention, I don't know if you noticed it, when they covered the big black guy, they shot him at a low angle, so it looked like him and Baldwin were like the same height.
Well, he had to look big.
Yeah.
They kept talking about how big he was, so they had to cheat it somehow.
And so, like, all it really did, all it accomplished was it made Metavoy look even smaller than he usually does. But it was just a funny angle to put it in.
Yeah, but they had to.
All right. That's it?
Yeah, that's all I got.
You're good?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to comment on my appearance? Or
no, not today.
You want to call me a bitch or a racist?
Cause I mean, you are racist, but we'll figure that out next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate the podcast on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how people see it in their algorithm. And more importantly, they might start watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you just need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There's What Would Sipwits Do?, a collection of articles about the show. There's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for, I believe, 99 cents. And there are two in-world stories by Max Allen Collins, Blue Bloods and Blue Beginnings. If you find them for a decent price, scoop them up, because they are not decently priced on Amazon anymore. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We are no longer on X or Twitter or whatever you call it. We're not on Threads. And we're mostly just mentioning when new episodes come out, which is typically every other Tuesday. Thank you so much. Hope you're having a great summer. Hope you're doing well. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to each other. And have a good one. Peace.